Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
Okay, let's get into the rugby. Brian O'Driscoll is here. Let's start with the moment of controversy first and we can get on to the more interesting stuff. So the penalty scrum situation. A quote from Gerry Thornley in today's Irish Times. He says, freeze frame, Beauden Barrett's restart. Kieran Reid is 3 yards in front of the ball. It should have been a scrum back on the halfway to the lines. He says what followed is all irrelevant. And he says Romain Poit asked his TMO, George Ayoub, if he was happy that no one was in front of the ball for the restart. And Ayoub answered in the affirmative. If only he checked, says Gerry. I haven't heard Romain Poit say this to Ayoub.
That makes two of us.
Yeah.
But I read the article as well. And I wasn't sure on the ruling as to whether he was able to go to the TMO for an infringement in front. So I actually texted a referee that I sometimes ask a few things, and the response was, no, we can only check that offside by Reid if a try was scored within two phases. So even if he was able, if he did do it, he wasn't meant to do it. So that wasn't the issue. This is about foul play. You can't go back to the TMO for every decision. You've got to, there's got to be an element of human error in there. What we're looking out for is foul play. And it was ruled, and correctly so, that there was no foul play in the challenge with Reid in the air on Williams.
Yeah.
And for me, it was a pretty clear-cut penalty.
Yeah.
You know, the ball, the difference between the two, between a penalty and an accidental offside is if the ball intentionally rebounds forward and hits you, that's obviously an accidental offside. If it comes forward and you go to grab it, and you could see that Owens went to do it and then realised, I shouldn't be doing this, but that's too late, that the infringement has already happened.
Yeah.
So that's why it should have been a penalty. And Romain Poit, he bought himself some time. I saw Steve Hansen talking about time can be the enemy sometimes for referees, where they can second guess their decision. But even Ayoub, when he went to the TMO and talked it through, he confirmed that it was a penalty. And in a period of 10 seconds, as Poit walked over to speak to two captains, he decided to change his mind. And we've got a deal. Well, no deal for the All Blacks, really.
Kieran Reid saying, I don't agree.
Yeah. So
Hansen says that Romain's instinct was it was a penalty. Straight away, you could see the young fella who caught the ball, he knew, shit, I shouldn't be catching this. So he chucked it away. And that's how it looked to me as well. That's everyone's instinct and, you know, the pressure, the moment. That's what got to Poit here, you have to feel.
People are comparing, you know, it's the comparisons of Joubert and Australia and Scotland. I think it was slightly different because the Scotland one, the ball rebounded and you weren't fully sure who it rebounded off, whereas it was clear that this came off Williams and Owens was a fraction in front of him and he knew his indiscretion immediately, but the reaction time was just too slow. And I don't know if I fully agree with Hansen saying that if Owens had left the ball, Leonard Brown was going to be under the sticks. You know, he might have been able to pick it up and they might have made some ground. But I don't know. I think it was a bit far-fetched thinking he was under the posts.
Yeah. I saw Luke Fitzgerald today saying it was an absolute stinker. That was the first word that came to mind about the penalty.
Stinker. Stinker as in stinker decision.
Yeah.
You know what? Human instinct from Poit, and I can understand that, but he's got to take that out of it, is that you don't want a series to be decided on something like that, an infringement so unwarranted in the circumstance that it happened. You know, for one player to make an indiscretion that was hundreds of a second, and then the decision to pull out was too late. But that's not his role. It's, you know, and as Kieran Reid said, in the letter of the law, an offside is an offside, and it's the infringement is a penalty. And listen, who would have known? Maybe Beauden Barrett mightn't have knocked it over. You know, it would have been a pressure kick.
Well, that's true. So, I mean, you said last week, and I've no doubt you said it at the outset of the tour as well, the lines to do anything in this tour would need all the breaks, would need things to bounce their way, would need things to go their way. You would have to say on balance across certainly the last two tests, things really went their way.
Yeah, they did. They forced the issue too. So let's not take a good bit of the credit away from them. I think they were very fortuitous in the first 20 minutes. There was that no try from Julian Sevilla dropping a a very basic pass from Jordy Murphy. Maybe it was a bit too much heat in the pass, but a good quality player that scored 46 tries in 52 tests.
I could hear Doug Hellett, cheering somewhere down the street.
His cheering is going to fall on deaf ears, because that guy's, you know, as long as he remains in the All Black team, he's going to surpass Howlett's record. But, you know, that changes the momentum of a game. 4 minutes in, it settles nerves. If he gets it. And, you know, you saw from the Lemapé try that we'll get onto in a minute, that Barrett, even though he'd missed his first conversion or his first penalty in front of the sticks, the one from the touchline is miles easier sometimes because the expectations are low and you just, it's more of a natural strike. And that one would have been out in the touchline. So, you know, 5-0, but maybe 7-0. And it just settles everything. And they grow into the game, and then you try and get the next score. And these sort of games are, there's momentum switches and swings. And we saw with the Sonny Bill sending off in the second test. And other big moments where you just have to get that shift on your side, be it a big collision or a referee decision. And the game swings from the one dominant force, you know, to the other becoming the dominant force.
This is a New Zealand team, and I appreciate they're in transition, but a New Zealand team which averaged 5 tries a game last season. So have the Lions here managed to put together some sort of template which the rest of the world can look at and say, do you know what? They're human when you do that to them.
I think there is a blueprint there. I think there's definitely a defensive blueprint. I think two things are massively important, and one is a knock-on effect to the other. I think we saw in the first test the speed of the ruck ball that the All Blacks were generating 1 and 2 second rucks. No team in the world can live with that, because the knock-on effect is that no defensive line sets, no line speed, no ability to be able to close the space down. So if you do slow that ruck ball up to 4, 5, 6 seconds at times, you can set your line, you can have numbers in the backfield to cover the kick, but then you could see the Lions shooting off. And they were never thinking of drifting in defence. They were just thinking hard press, man in front of them. And sometimes they miss big, but they, you know, when they made their collisions, we saw Jonathan Davis a couple of times, the collisions were big. And
is that a difficult thing to do, not to drift, push up like that?
No, it would be much more preferable. Certainly as an outside back, you know, you're not having to make as many decisions. Okay. You just see, you're lining up, see the guy inside you, who he has, and your simple job is to just take the next man.
So there's a simplicity to it which players might quite like.
It would be far more preferable to have a man on defence, because it's basic. It's you're owning your space in front of you rather than trying to read a short runner and then potentially someone out the back. So you're really only doing one job, as to, you know, job in a bit.
The interesting thing then is that, so on the one hand you have this template which potentially the rest of the world can look at. On the other hand, you have enough time before the next World Cup for the All Blacks to say, well, how do we get around this now if this is going to come at us? And that's an interesting dynamic going on right now.
Yeah, and they'll revert back to team slowing their ruck ball. The issue was at source, was slowing it down. And to keep them to as few tries as they scored over the test series is testament to Andy Farrell and the defensive system. But they'll kick themselves that they weren't able to stay on top of their rucking form in the first test and kick on from there. And you can be sure over the Rugby Championship we'll see some pretty intensive rucking, and how they'll make that a huge focal point of generating creating the knock-on effect to the rest of their game plan, which is, you know, speed of ball, front foot, and then quality players like Beauden Barrett hitting the ball at speed with, you know, players in relative depth outside him, and then somewhat of a fractured defensive line, people not getting off the line as much. It seems so simplified, but that's the reality of how important it is in the collision zone to make a dominant hit in defence, and then second man to get in and be able to slow it down. A second or two can be everything.
So top level players can look forward to extra rucking practice for at least the next World Cup cycle, and they'll really enjoy that. But I don't know how to think about this New Zealand team now then. From last year, record number of matches, world record number of matches until Chicago, and seemingly this next generation, everybody as good as the previous one, to watching this series and them not being able to work things out and get it done, and a lot of mistakes that you wouldn't see. I appreciate they're under pressure, and those mistakes don't happen in isolation, but not the first time in their lives they've been under pressure. So I don't quite know How good is this team now?
I think, you know, the great thing is that they look human. They look human in this test series. And I think that's great for world rugby.
Yeah.
Because, you know, before November, everyone would have thought the next World Cup was a foregone conclusion, maybe with an outside chance of England rattling a few cages. Mm. But the All Blacks, again, you know, they're going to be the first team to win three in a row. I think what this does, it gives, similarly to what Ireland created for the Lions tours, it gives everyone a shot in the arm that, do you know what, on our day, if we can stop them from playing well and we can impose ourselves and have a great defensive game and have a good goal kicker, you're in the hunt with these guys.
Yeah.
And they can be rattled. That's the other thing. Of that, there was no doubt.
So were you in some ways disappointed with this New Zealand team?
I do think that the guys that have come in, particularly, you know, look at the centres, I think they've got a long way to go to being the quality of centre partnership that Manonu and Conrad Smith were. And I think that's a big area of where the Lions got some ascendancy.
Yeah. So presumably Andy Farrell's stock is sky high right now.
He's the first coach to ever beat the All Blacks with three different international teams.
Yeah.
That speaks volumes for the standards that he sets within the teams he's involved in, and it speaks volumes for his defensive system and the ideas, because he is lots of coaches, and Sean Edwards, you know, is a big advocate of off the line and hammer defense, getting up in players' face, but this brought it to a new level, and I think.
In what way, Brian?
I just think the intensity was greater. I think the willingness to get off the line for the first five steps was far more evident. I think when you see that defence trying to turn defence into attack and use it as a weapon, I think that's a very, very powerful tool to use on top of a good attack game. And I think at times the Lions' attack game, we saw aspects of it. It could have been a bit better, but that performance was absolutely built on ferocious defence.
But it's interesting you say that, because Shane Horgan in the Sunday Times yesterday, he said the Lions attack was a better unit than New Zealand. He said it was more sophisticated in the game yesterday, more sophisticated in the way they were trying to break down the opposition defence. Now, technically, he's going to understand that a lot more than me, but I find that very surprising, really, that a team thrown together in the way the Lions are was more sophisticated, an attacking unit than the All Blacks. Do you agree with that? Can you explain that?
I think in parts. I think we haven't seen the best of this attacking All Black team. We can only judge it on what we've seen in this test series. Mm. But I think for the first time in a long time, I think seeing the All Blacks running out of ideas. And I saw a number of times Beauden Barrett at first receiver having to go himself. Now, he likes to take the ball on because he backs himself, but having to go in traffic because the alternative was just shipping on a hospital pass or not having an option outside or inside him, so he had to carry. Mm. And that's an unusual place for them to find themselves in. I think the Lions' attack shape really grew, and you know, the quality of passing at time just hurt it a little bit, stuck inside shoulder, but I think their shape looked really good at times, and definitely the 10-12 combination. You saw the old Leinster and Ireland loop plays coming off Owen Farrell. I think you've got to have a quality ball player like him at 12 to be able to do them. He's throwing those no-look passes. Jonathan Davis was running the short lines, being able to stick defenders down. You saw in the second test with George going through on the short line with a runner out the back, the no-look passes. I think all of the shapes started to really kick in towards the end of the tour, and they had a very clear understanding of the timings of one another, because that's in essence what's really important. You only get that from being in a pressurised situation, getting it at games. You can try and facilitate doing it at training, but it's not to the same degree. Only in a really high pressured situation can you realise whether you picked the right pass or not, and we saw that in test 2 and 3.
Because you mentioned there the Leinster loop, I was going to ask you, was that shape particularly similar to any side international, or it's just a mixture?
The shape is different than the back plays. The back plays, I thought the Lions had pretty unsophisticated back plays. They focused on multi-phase an awful lot more, playing keep ball and waiting for mismatches. And part of multi-phase is about trying to do that. It's trying to isolate bigger players in the wider channels. And that's why, from a defensive system point of view, you want to get those bigger players in around the ruck as close to the faster players in the wide channels as you can, because you know, you get an outside back, you get a Watson or an Elliot Daly against a Franks or a Moody, and that's the dream ticket. So that's why you do, you build your multi-phase to try and get into those positions of one-on-ones and then getting offloads away.
Yeah. So from a Gallant point of view, this is just a raging success now. I can barely remember the Geography 6. It all just disappears suddenly when, you know, it, and we said at the start, we'll come down to what happens in the tests. And whether it was good behind the scenes, bad behind the scenes, or indifferent behind the scenes, or whether lads were fed up with the whole thing or not, Gatland emerges now and is king of the castle and is, you know, being asked, will you stay on till 2021 by journalists? So if you can almost park the test results, and I appreciate that's a really difficult thing to do because it comes down to the test results, how do you rate the job Gatland has done? Is it possible to do that from the outside?
I don't think so. I think the players are only the ones that really know of the success of what went on within there.
Yeah.
So, you know, from the outside, I'm no different than you. I've obviously spoke to a couple of players. You're always going to have a few disgruntled players, the guys that don't get selected.
Yeah.
I haven't spoken to at length, really, to any of those players that have been in the 23. But you can be sure, you know, any level of success paints over any cracks in any team, not just this Lions team. I'm not saying there were any cracks involved because I don't truly know, but...
Well, you can guarantee there are disgruntled players because there's too many in the squad.
Geography 6 were pretty disgruntled.
Did they not have a good time, no?
Not from what I heard, but...
Yeah.
But you're right.
That's unavoidable.
Was it
09, 13?
Well, if you pick Lounsbury and the players that maybe are worthwhile and just keep them there and play them, that's... That makes it not unavoidable.
Yeah.
Whereas, anyway, it's irrelevant, as you said, because Gatland always said, judge me on the result of the test series, and he's gotten a drawn series, which is a remarkable achievement. So you're right, there is vindication there.
Mm.
Whether you agree with what he did with that Geography 6 or with, you know, playing the same team from the first Saturday, and picking his test team pretty early or the vast majority of them, that's neither here nor there because he got the job done.
Mm.
And we can all have our opinions, but the reality is that he's the one that's got a favourable result, not the result that they were searching for, but a pretty good one to follow up.
Oh, yeah. The format, the talk of the format for 2021 is that, so we had a 6-week, 10-match tour. And the talk is it's going back to 5 weeks, and I don't know how many matches in that 5 weeks. And, you know, this was put to Gatland in the press conference, and he's saying things like, we've got to be realistic here and give whoever the coach is, if it's myself or someone else, a chance. And by that I mean at least a week in Ireland or Great Britain to prepare, and then at least a week when we land in South Africa before our first match. Like, it's just got to be fair on me or whoever's doing the job and the players. And yet there is the huge pressure from Premiership Rugby and the PRL, and they don't want this. I mean, they don't want the thing to happen. It's of no huge benefit to them. Like, realistically, what kind of period can you squeeze this into? Can we get to a point where there's 3.5-week Lions tours? You know,
God,
like, there's
I
got
hope
to
not.
Be a minimum.
I you could see that the Lions got better with every week.
They did.
And the cohesion starts really... embedding itself in with the different units. The front row got to know one another. Toji and Alan Wynn, the halfback pairing, and Farrell and Sexton, the more games they played together, the better they looked. So I heard John Spencer, the manager, saying that we were another week away from it being a winnable series with that cohesion. And I think that's a fair point. I think they did look as though they were getting better and better with time rather than the ones that are at the end of a long season and starting to tire out. So, God, I hope they don't cut it any shorter than the 6 or 7 weeks that it is. I think, you know, you've got to plan for that fourth year, have a slight variation in the domestic leagues of finishing a little bit earlier or maybe not having a knockout stage and have the tabletop winners as outright winners. And give them a fighting chance because you need it against unbelievably well-drilled, usually one of the best teams in the world. It's going to be South Africa will be back as one of the best teams in the world at that stage.
And if you're one of the dirt trackers as well, it's, you know, you're not going to give up so much to go out and play one match or two matches if it gets squeezed right down to, like, so they're done 5 weeks the next time, because down to 4 weeks, yeah. And say it's Gatland again, and he's basically picked his test side early on. You're giving up all of this time to go out and play one match against a provincial side, maybe yeah. two, and that's not a great deal. It stops becoming a great deal after that.
It does, and you're going to have disgruntled dirt trackers no matter what. You're yeah. going to have guys that will have a very differing opinion than those that were involved in the 23. Sure. That is the reality of a Lions tour, and that some players will be dying to get back into their national setups or into their club setups. Mm. That's because they just didn't have the experience that they would have wanted, because players go on tours to play games and play in the big matches, and if you aren't involved, you're going to feel not part of it. And that's, I know that feeling too. That's yeah. the reality of being a top quality sportsman, is that you want to be able to pit yourself against the best teams and see, can you deliver? And if you're not wearing the jersey, it's pretty difficult to do that.
Has Peter Omani been unfairly treated? I use the word unfairly, deliberately.
Unfairly, let me see. Because of how it's worked out, you have to look and think that Sam Warburton coming in and playing incredibly well for two games, having gotten a little bit more under his belt in that first test. In one breath, yes, because potentially he's a scapegoat for the disappointment and because he was captain too of that first test and not making the 23. But then, you know, in another breath, that back row of Sean O'Brien, Faletau and Sam Warburton were outstanding in those two tests. Mm. So again, it comes down to results vindicating any decision.
Yeah.
And you might look at someone like Alan Wynne-Jones, who didn't have his greatest tour, but he's still been in the mix and still stayed in there. So you could potentially have, you know, as much as you look at Peter O'Mahony being hard done by, I think Alan Jones has been probably fortuitous, even though I would have kept him in there myself yeah. because of the player he is. I think from the way he's played, I think he's been fortuitous to maybe play all three test matches.
Because Gatland said, we could have put Peter on the bench. This was after the game at the weekend. And we had a long discussion about that. But CJ had an outstanding Six Nations and was good the other night with his carries and his physicality. So the impact he's able to bring off the bench could be significant. So they went with CJ on the bench. But I think a lot of casual rugby fans thought, well, how can you go from the starting team to not even on the bench? You're a victim of your position there.
Yeah, you are. But I think as well, you can't... CJ didn't get on in the second test. You,
yeah.
know, you can't penalise a guy for not getting on and not play him in the third test.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
He was picked in the second test for a reason, and then
what did,
know,
I do wrong?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, did I warm up wrong before yeah. before I went on the yeah. before I tried to pull my tracksuit off?
Fair point.
So I don't think you could change that for the third test, because you have to stick with your concept as to how best you're going to beat that team. And having a big ball carrier like that served them well in the second half too.
Yeah. Time against us, then we'll rattle through some quick things for Sexton, O'Brien, Murray, and Furlong. I mean, wow, just yeah. so positive. Like, Sexton really turned things around. Yeah. And then, you know, Sean O'Brien seems to have... I mean, if you were like 10 years ago, you were saying, well, how good could O'Brien be? Maybe that was the dream, the vision you might have had in your head down the line. I mean, he was everything you hoped he would be. Conor Murray was Conor Murray, particularly in Test 2 and 3. And then for 24-year-old Tyke Furlong to go and do that...
He was outstanding. He had an outstanding
huge
tour.
For them.
I think all four of them really represented themselves brilliantly. It's what you expect from Murray. His box kicking, you know, just was such a saving grace for the Lions at times. Took massive pressure off Sexton, relieved, you know, gave the forwards a break at times. Kicked into the stands when needed be, and kicked long when necessary as well, got incredible length. And that was a huge component of being able to set up position and territory as well, to be able to set the defensive line and then attack too. Sexton was you know, really grew into his role, and I thought he had a very strong third test. And and Sean O'Brien, I think the respect that he has down in New Zealand speaks volumes for this series, but also the games that he's played, the big games he's played against New Zealand. I think they always rate him. And he's had another massive tour, and should be very pleased with his performances.
As an aside, Gatland mentioned that he has a chunk of his hip bone in his shoulder from his recent surgery, which I didn't realise. So
that sounds very dramatic but that happens a lot.
Fair enough. You mentioned Alan Jones. I mean, are you looking, as he gets a clobber and looks to me like he goes unconscious and then goes in for his HIA and comes back, I know in the midst of the game feeling more important, it's probably not the primary concern, but the HIA is just doesn't look fit for purpose when things like that are happening. I know you're not a doctor.
Yeah, I'm always cautious on second guessing a doctor sending someone back out because I don't think for sure that you can sense or watch the replays a few times in slow-mo. I don't think you can be sure to say that he was knocked out.
True.
So first of all, I think you have to be clear with that. And if he wasn't, well, then he could have been a bit groggy and maybe not concussed. So that's why you have medics. That's why the integrity of medics is so important, that you can't question that. And that's why you have to put an awful lot of faith in them to make the right call. And can you understand that there was questions surrounding that? Of course.
Sure.
But I don't think you can be adamant one way or another that it was the right call or the wrong call.
Yeah, totally fair. So to sum things up then, the Lions is in a far better place really than it was before this tour started. And Gatland would have taken this, all the players would have taken this. It's been really good. I mean, you would have to say all of these players can look back on this as one of the big achievements in their career. In our lifetime, we may never see another Lions team every 12 years. We may never see a Lions team go to New Zealand and come back undefeated. It's quite probable that won't happen. So this is unbelievably successful.
I don't know, that's very negative of you, Joe.
It's realistic.
We're
1971.
Yeah, but that's the beauty of this, and you live in hope, and this gives life to other sides that will go down there. And the cycle is, you can't see 4 years ahead, let alone 12 years ahead. So you have no clue what shape Northern Hemisphere rugby versus Southern Hemisphere is going to be in at that point. But we talked last week about, do the Lions have a chance in the third test? Of course they do, because it's a two-horse race. Mm. And even though you thought that everything was stacked in favour of the All Blacks, you know, it's a mental game as much as it's a physical game. And if you can get that part right, you've got a chance.
Mm.
And the Lions definitely got that part right and deserved what they got out of it. The Lions is in great shape. I think John Fian, head of the Lions, and Charlie McKeown, head of commercial, will be absolutely delighted with how things have transpired.
Jackpot.
Because the brand is as strong as ever, and anyone wanting to jump on the Lions bandwagon in 4 years' time is going to have to pay a price for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for all that. The other bad news, by the way, today is Gary Ringrose is now out for 5 months till November with a shoulder injury, and Robbie Henshaw, as we know, is out for 4 months. So that's beautiful news for Leo Cullen, isn't it? With Sean O'Brien and Sexton coming back to be assessed. This is the cost.
That's what happens on Lions tour. Yeah. I think obviously Gary Ringrose, was on the Irish tour, but part and parcel of long seasons, and sometimes you get a bit of luck, and sometimes it goes against you, and they could be. I don't know about Sexton. He looks as though he might be okay, but it looks bad for Sean O'Brien, and obviously the two other boys getting surgery. It looks as though they're going to miss them for the first couple of games of Europe anyway. So, step up the academy players that showed promise last year, and we'll see what the future lies.
Brilliant stuff. Thanks for all that.
Cheers.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.